Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And we are waiting. We'll be joined momentarily here by Abbotsford Canucks general manager Ryan Johnson to talk about, a lot to get into with RJ here, not just from the Vancouver Canucks perspective, because obviously there's a ton of players with Abbotsford experience this year contributing right now to the team. But the Abbey Canucks themselves are on a massive hot streak. They've won seven in a row. They're going for their eighth straight win tonight. So a lot of positive things happening around the Abbotsford Canucks at the moment. So Ryan Johnson will join us in just a second here, and we can dive into a lot of that with him. Of course, Dmitry Filipovich will join us at the 1:30 segment as well to wrap up the week, look ahead to the Canucks schedule, look ahead to how the playoff races and maybe some of the playoff matchups are shaking up as well. But right now, as mentioned, joining us here on Canucks Talk, he is the GM for the Abbotsford Canucks, Ryan Johnson. Ryan, thanks very much for taking some time to chat with us today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And I mean, we're really excited to have you on because there's just a lot to talk about with the Abbotsford Canucks and the Abbotsford Canucks and how they're helping out the Vancouver Canucks as well. I'll start with the Abbey Canucks themselves. I mean, the team's on a roll right now. They're going for their eighth straight win tonight. What has clicked recently for the Abbotsford Canucks?
Well, I think it's a culmination of the, you know, as I've said all along, we're not the American League level. It's less about the wins and losses, more about the process. It's something we talked about from our original meeting in Calgary to start the season, was making sure our focus was not on the results, but on our process, how we practice, how we approached week in and week out, coming to the rink with a plan and making sure that we were playing Canuck hockey and not just trying to find individual success at the American League level. And that was, you know, the focus on the details of the game, that from Rick Tocchet to Manny Malhotra, that the organizational staples of wall plays, the compete, the 50-50 battles, and managing the game. I think as we've gone along, we told our players that if they worked on their game with the resources we have, the coaching staff, and that they would improve as players, give themselves the chance to be NHL players. And a caveat of that is usually having a chance to win some games at the American League level. So you're seeing, you know, I think now as guys have bought into that, it's having some success as a team at the American League level, but also helping our NHL team win hockey games because guys are coming up and playing the right way. And I think it's a sign of our organizational as a whole, is our strength and our confidence in our group, is that we definitely feel like there's 10 or 12 other guys that could be called up that could contribute in the same way because they're playing the game the right way.
Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about the job that Manny Malhotra has done? Obviously, you moved on from a really experienced American League head coach. Manny Malhotra has a ton of NHL experience as a player, as an assistant, but this was his first, you know, pro head coaching job. And it certainly looks, not just from the results that you guys have accumulated over the course of the year, but also the readiness of all these young guys we're watching play in the NHL right now, that has been a pretty phenomenal first year for him.
Well, he's done an outstanding job, and obviously the acclimation for him from being an assistant coach in the NHL to being a first-time head coach, it's a lot more complicated than it may seem as far as running a bench and mm-hmm. navigating a staff and from a different angle, but also the day-to-day, you know, we call it the adaptable hockey league in the American Hockey League, because day-to-day your lineup changes. You know, one thing we laughed about early was, you know, our coaching staff, they were running specialty teams practices on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and just told them stop it because your team Friday morning will look a lot different than it does today. So he's done a great job adapting in that way, navigating relationships with our players and working with our resources of Daniel Henrik Sedin, Jason Krog. And I mean, I think, yeah, it's been a great job for the staff there, but also I think it is a great sign organizationally as these young players are developing. You got to look at Todd Harvey and our amateur group, how they've drafted our pro group on some of these second organization players. We've identified our development department that has a key in getting these guys from drafted to pro. It's compliment to the group as a whole and our organization to feel like, even though where we've been and pushing to be a playoff team, sometimes that comes as a sacrifice of your development and your American League team. But I think we feel very strongly in organizationally our strength from top to bottom right now.
Ryan, Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, sorry, I always add that in case I pronounce the first name incorrectly. You know, we saw him get a long look at training camp, right? And we've seen, I think, repeatedly between development camp and on, World Juniors, that he's an immensely talented player. But while that talent was evident at training camp, he looks ready in a completely different way at the NHL level now versus what he looked like when he was still impressing at training camp. What, for you, as the GM of the Abbotsford Canucks, do you see as sort of, like, is it just reps? What's evolved in his game to get him to the point that we're seeing every night now when he dresses in Canucks colors?
Well, I think it's a credit to him in being extremely coachable. I think when you come in with size, the ability to skate, the eagerness, I've said this before, I mean, you see a smile on his face when he has the opportunity to be physical on a game. Like, he truly enjoys that aspect of it. He, I think, really owns his identity, which I will say for young defensemen, and I've seen a lot of them over the years, often that is the last kind of step in their development, is owning what they're going to be at the end of the day. And I think Petey has owned that right from day one and into training camp. And I remember saying to people, I think it might be February if he stays on the right, it might be time. And he's the job again that Manny and Jordan Smith and the group has done with him of just refining some things. And now obviously having talk and Footy and the guys up there being able to touch on him and remind some of those little details. But when you own your identity, especially as a defenseman, and as you guys know, you can insulate forwards and surround them with players that maybe help them navigate the next step. Defenseman, you're essentially on your own. And for him to be able to adapt his game, take to the coaching, use his tools and just sharpen them is a credit to him. He's a special player, as you see. And I think he's just, you know, he hasn't even, at 20 years old, he probably has a couple more years even before he kind of it reaches, I wouldn't say the ceiling, but even close to what he could be.
Now, Ryan, we would never put you in the spot of asking you about a player like Tom Volander, who a lot of our listeners are interested in, given sort of the possibility that his college season could end with the next BU loss. But coming back to Elias Pettersson and also to Lekkerimäki, we've got a couple guys in the NHL lineup right now who started their pro careers on the conclusion of not their college seasons, but their European seasons last year, got sort of some games at the American League level, and we've sort of seen their rocket ship trajectory over the course of the year. So in general terms, if a young player at the conclusion of their season begins their pro journey, like down the stretch in the American League, what are some of the benefits of that from a developmental perspective?
Well, just in general, and you saw with Petey and Lucky last year, and obviously not commenting on Tom, as we're excited for him to a big win yesterday for their group.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Competing for a national championship and support him through that. But I think as an overall, we saw it with Philip Johansson. We saw it with Lucky and Petey last year. They came over and it, and you get a feel for the North American game. But I think even more than that, building some relationships with staff and teammates and having the ability to get a taste of that, it changes your off season. It changes what you really, what you have now, a true idea, feeling of what's coming. And it allows you to maybe adjust your focus going into an off season of, well, I'll just keep doing what I was doing. No, maybe there are adjustments to be made. But I find, either way, it springboards you into training camp, familiarity with staff and some of those players that you've got to not just maybe come in and see from afar, but you've competed with, and you've played in some important games. It obviously is a step that not everybody gets to do or is the right step for everybody. But with those guys, as you've seen, obviously Rulecki and PDR now, I think that certainly helped for their individual cases.
We're in conversation with Abbotsford Canucks general manager Ryan Johnson here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And, you know, Ryan, there's a long list of players with Abbotsford experience this year who are going to be in the lineup tonight for the Canucks, who have been in the lineup in recent games and have, you know, played a big role in helping you guys pick up points at the NHL level. I think of Lekker Mäki with the goal and the shootout winner recently. You know, Atu Ratu scores the other night. And what is it? How important is it not just that these guys are getting opportunities at the NHL level, and I know every NHL game is a big opportunity, but specifically in this time of the season, in this situation the Vancouver Canucks find themselves in, you know, scratching and clawing to make the playoffs, how big is that, and how much of an opportunity is it for the organization to get a look at players in these types of games down the stretch?
Well, for sure, and this is, I've said to the group, like, you know, having a, you know, 5-point weekend in the American League doesn't really mean a whole lot to us as an organization. But when you're able to play the right way, like I said, to manage the game and make decisions that you're viewed as an NHL player, I mean, I will say calling players up right now, and a compliment again to our staff and the strength of our organization, is not an easy one. We've got a lot of guys that are doing things the right way that have bought into how we want to play as Canucks, but it changes the confidence of the group, and even talk and his group to know, well, yeah, I can bring this guy up and insert him because I know the details are going to be there. And I think that's what is exciting right now with some of the adversity and the injuries and things that we've faced, to be able to insert these guys and play with the same confidence and approach the game, because that's what they've been accustomed to at the American League. I always say, you know, the worst thing in the world is for a guy to play Friday in Abbotsford and get called up, play Saturday at Rogers Arena, and have to think, oh gosh, now I have to play this way. To know that, hey, this is the expectation of whatever I'm at, and the conversation between Talk and Manny to start the year, that there's no guesswork or no, what do I got to, it's, hey, I might be at a different level, but I'm just going to go play the same way to help this team try to win a hockey game. And to have those guys in a dogfight right now is great for them, but I think it's great for our current guys, our guys that are coming, to understand that that's what the goal is at the end of the day, is not to win an AHL championship, is to get them ready to help us win a Stanley Cup.
And one of the players who's come up recently, I mentioned he scored that big goal against the Islanders the other day, is Atu Ratu. And I think he's caught a lot of people's attention with his play after coming up again most recently to fill in for the Canucks. And you look at his production in the AHL, and it spiked on a per-game basis this year. But as you said, there's a lot more than just production that goes into making the jump from AHL player to call up to full-time NHL player. What are the final steps that Atu Ratu needs to take to make that last jump, to go from being a guy you call up to a guy who's permanent on an NHL roster?
Well, I think he's done that. He's put himself in phenomenal shape, which was important for us as an organization as a whole. And I think one of the things that we've really preached with these guys and from day one, like I said, was that the iron sharpens iron mentality, whereas we're watching on a Friday night for a game, but more importantly is how you walk into the facility on Monday morning and how are you going to get better. Ratz is one of those guys that have bought into the theory of having a plan every time he walks into the arena. What is from 8 o'clock till 1 o'clock, what does it look like so that when I leave here, I've improved and I've gotten better. He's done that and it showed in his game. You know, he's stronger, he's moving better, and he's an extremely smart player that allows him to adapt to the NHL level very well. So there's no surprise that he's contributed to our group in different ways, and hopefully he and all those guys can continue with that to give us a chance, obviously, in a big game tonight here in Columbus.
Called up under emergency conditions, Max Sisson. He had a good run with the club earlier on in the year, came back down. We know that can be a really significant mental challenge for players. RJ, how did he respond to that? Where's his game trending in the wake of us perhaps seeing him again tonight?
Well, it's been great. I mean, it's one thing for a guy to come up and have a couple games and come back down. It's when these players, some of them have played 15, 20 games. Some of them played a year and a half.
Right.
Coming back, it is very much a mental. It's a mental challenge more than it is anything. It's a bit different game. It's a bit different scattered. And I always find the guys that come back, it's two or three games of a bit of a struggle because they think, hey, coming back here, things should, you know, happen a little naturally and easily for me. And they find out quick they're back into the fire and it's difficult. So with Max and all those guys, it's just refocusing, keeping the eye on the prize and staying with the process. And Ratz has come down and Sass and Carly, you name it, Lucky. They've come back at different times, and I think as opposed to being, well, you know, what happened or why, I mean, you can really learn from that experience and say, okay, now again, what can I improve on to go up and never come back? And that's always the goal with guys, is to get them to a point, you know, it's great for a guy to get a taste and a look here and there. What you really want is to get a player ready where he can go down the road and you feel pretty good about, well, we're not going to see him again. That's, you know, the end goal with these guys. And sometimes with players, it takes, you know, a taste of it to go, okay, great. I know I can play here. Yeah, that's fine. But can I play in a way and play a role here that I can help us win playoff games and win a championship? That's the major difference, because there's definitely guys that can play, but can they play on a team that wins? And that's what we're trying to obviously groom there in Abbotsford.
Ryan, we really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us. I know fans are pretty excited about just what they're seeing from the Abbotsford players coming up and doing the job for the Canucks right now. So congratulations on the success with the team this year. Best of luck going forward, and thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much. And like I said, that's an organizational thing. We've got a lot of people that do a lot of work behind the scenes and a lot of work on the road to get to that point. But we got some hockey left to play here, and it's an exciting time of year. So thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. That is Ryan Johnson, Abbotsford Canucks general manager.
Yeah, I think the overall integration of the American League team after it moved, right? So the relocation of the Utica Comets franchise, because, and this is important, well, it's important, this is inside baseball, but the Canucks bought the Utica Comets franchise and relocated it to Abbotsford. And then Robert Esch and that group was able to bring in a different franchise.
Yes.
So the Canucks relocated and baked in an American League team from scratch. And that first year was also the last year under Jim Benning's regime, right? And really last half year. That first season. So the club went about staffing, like Kyle Burrows was signed to play for the American League team. Sheldon Dries, like a bunch of guys who ended up being NHL contributors.
Yeah.
They were a big spending team, right? They spent, you know, they had one of the biggest budgets in the American League, because of course the AHL is an uncapped league. And under Rutherford and Alvin, you've seen a sort of a different type of integration. There's been more of a development approach, right? The team has been younger. the team has been far more sustainable, far more affordable from a business perspective. And yet the results have stayed consistent. This is a team that's on pace to make the playoffs for the third straight year, right? Despite a radically reorienting how they were doing business and really focusing on young players and college free agents and changing sort of their method of player acquisition. Obviously, Ryan Johnson has been central to that. And as he says, it's quite a bit wider than that. This year, you also had the way that they were sending guys up and down, right? Mm-hmm. Leveraging the proximity of Abbotsford to effectively build a surplus cap space, which ultimately the club didn't use, in part because this season didn't go to plan. And they're still sort of churning out, you know, high quality players or having guys like LeCaire Mackey go down to the American League, dominate and be better for it when we finally see them in the NHL. Now, we're not yet at the point where the franchise has like a star contributor or really high level contributor that spent a ton of time down in Abbotsford. I guess Nils Höglander would kind of be the closest.
Yeah.
But even there, it was more like they sent him down to insulate him from the
Boudreaux
dysfunction.
Because he started in the NHL, then he went down.
Right.
So it's a different thing.
Totally. It was more an insulation thing. So
I think the closest right now to being like a true AHL development home run success story is Elias Pettersson. Like, if he sticks...
Yeah, or LeCaire Mackey. I mean? Him and LeCaire Mackey are on the same time frame.
I just think it's because there's something, as Ryan Johnson said there, you want to send guys up and then never see them again, and DPD's in the position to do that.
Right.
LeCaire Mackey went back and forth. That's fine. That could be the right thing.
Yeah, but now he's up and has a chance to never go back. I think they're on the same timeline.
The symbolism of, like, you came up once. You made one jump. I think that is important, and DPD's the guy that has a chance to do that.
Sure. So, you know what? Interesting. I like it. I just think, yeah, okay. I'm not going to quibble with it. Fair enough. I put them in the same bucket. The point is like, it takes some time. If you're doing the right things from like a player development, player acquisition, farm team management perspective, cap-wise, player acquisition-wise, it's going to take some time. Like, this is only, what, year four, year five for the Abbotsford experiment? The franchise was acquired in 2020. Like spring of 2021.
Yeah.
So year
four. This is their fourth year in Abbotsford.
So it's going to take some time before you start to see those dividends in the NHL roster, right? Like star players with their, but it's been clear for a while that this organization, you know, has to their credit, kind of across multiple management teams, although there's a clear departure in strategy from the Rutherford group, you know, I think they've been doing the right things in terms of that stuff for a bit. And perhaps over the next 18 months, it looks likely that we're going to start to see that, you know, that bear fruit, as it were, at the NHL level. Arguably, we're seeing it in front of our eyes right now as some of these players help the Canucks kind of hold the fort, given the situation they find themselves in.
You're seeing it in a different way than what you want it to be long-term.
Yes.
But this is important, too. We're seeing it's crucially important to them hanging around in the playoff race. But as you said, you want it to be more long-term, locked-in guys who are major contributors who have spent time in the AHL and developed there. And again, that's where guys like LeCaire Mackey and DPD potentially come in down the road. We will take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I want to get into something you touched on in your latest piece at The Athletic, which is not necessarily Canucks-specific, but could be going into the summer, which is the potential for offer sheets as a means for going out and getting some young impact talent into the organization. So we can get into that a little bit, some potential targets. Send in your text as well. Again, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk next on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, footwear and orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So Of course, I was checking out your latest piece up at The Athletic earlier today, Drance, and some Canucks stuff, of course, that we discussed a little bit yesterday on the show about Rick Tocchet's future with the club, Tom Volander, and what might be next for him as well. But some other interesting things in there, and one of them was on the topic of offer sheets. And this wasn't necessarily specifically about the Canucks or you reporting the Canucks are planning to use offer sheets or anything, but I think the way you put it in the piece was that you had talked to a few different NHL executives and basically just pitched it to them like, hey, we all see what Dylan Holloway is doing with St. Louis. He had another massive game for them right now. He's been one of the, what, has he been the most productive player in the league since the Four Nations? Or
No, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. He's the third most productive at 5-on-5 behind, yeah. here's a whopper. Do you want to know who the most productive 5-on-5 player is?
Who?
I bet you couldn't guess it. It's Matvei Michkov.
Oh, wow.
17 points in 17 games. Crosby at 16, Dylan Holloway at 16. So tied with Crosby for second at 5-on-5. All strengths, he's top 10, but actually Robert Thomas has more points.
Sure.
Although Robert Thomas received a primary assist on Dylan Holloway's goal, which he very clearly pickpocketed.
There we go.
What did I say?
You said pickpocketed.
That's when you protest in a hole. Anyway, he pickpocketed Michael McCarron very clearly, but Robert Thomas still got credit. Signed his name to the group project. Holloway, 22 points in 18 games, but points in 9 straight, which is ludicrous as the Blues go steamrolling through the dregs of the Central Division.
And it's not as if Philip Broberg has been bad or anything for the Blues. Like, he's been a useful player as well. So Holloway's the home run, but they both ends of that double offer sheet with Edmonton worked out well for the St. Louis Blues. And so I think it's natural, and I've certainly been wondering it. We've got texts in about it. We know how much NHL teams like to copy each other, like to copy especially what the other successful teams are doing. When they see teams have success with a certain strategy, they're going to try to get in on that. So I think it's been a very fair question of, are we going to see a much busier offer sheet market than we typically do in the NHL this summer? And your latest piece at the Athletic seems to suggest that that's a significant possibility going into the offseason.
Yeah, perfect storm, right? And a couple of things were highlighted to me by executives as reasons beyond just the like classic copycat nature of the NHL, right? Blues had success doing this, so we should consider
it. Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, There's a variety of factors sort of creating or driving this. One is obviously the cap going up creates more cap space generally. Two, there's a weaker unrestricted free agent market.
Right.
Not a lot of top talent worth really bidding heavily on, right? That's a big part of this as well. And then you've also got, you know, you've got that's sort of the correlation of forces here. Now, would the Canucks consider it, given their needs for younger top six forwards in particular? Maybe. I mean, we'll see. I think the teams that are more apt to be closely tracked as clubs that would heavily consider leveraging the offer sheet device to add talent to their lineups are the Chicagos and San Jose's of the world, teams that have reams and reams of cap space.
Well, and also a surplus of draft picks.
Right.
So you pay the compensation. It's like, okay, we still have a first round pick this year, right?
Especially because what you're trying to do effectively is capture, you know, a Mackie Semiskevich or a Matthew Nyes type.
Yeah.
Right. You're trying to capture a higher upside young player, but who's also NHL ready now versus a guy who you might have to wait a little bit for now. One complication that was pointed out to me that I didn't actually include in the piece, but I'll talk about on the B-sides, is the 2025 NHL entry draft is not thought to be as strong as the 2026 class. Like,
right.
The 2026 class is shaping up to be extremely deep. So would a team like Chicago be careful about making sure that they're, you know, staying in that like third round pick range or second round pick range
as opposed to first round.
Well, and which means you're not making the huge bid for Nyes.
You're not
probably doing
Matthew Nyes, no.
Right?
But maybe Samuskevich or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing I'm curious about, like one thing we see in the NFL a lot, right? And I've been thinking a lot about football because I'm always thinking a lot about football, but also because football's had this, you know, $30 million a year cap growth. every year, like consistently across the last 5 years, in part because, you know, they didn't shut down for as long because on-field transmission of COVID wasn't a thing. Like it was
And their season had just ended.
Right.
Like if you ever wanted evidence that the NFL is like blessed by God,
yeah,
they're not the way the COVID played out for them, yeah. It's like
Mahomes just won the championship.
Yeah. We've got 6 months now to figure out what we're going to do and see how everyone else handles it. We're sitting pretty while you guys have to struggle.
Well, and then the truth is that you're relatively spread out in football.
Yeah.
Right. Like the pandemic impacted them less because you could play opposite a lineman who was testing positive and not test positive yourself. Whereas in hockey, you step on the ice with a COVID positive person, everyone gets it, right?
Yeah.
Like that's why the flu goes through teams every year and is going through the Canucks right now. So anyway, not to do the I thought we'd put the unprofessional epidemiology thing aside a couple of years back, but we'll dig back into the bag briefly. Anyway, because their league was less impacted, they've been in sort of normal times across the last 5 years, whereas hockey's finally getting cap growth for the first time since the pandemic. And one thing we've seen, like what happens a lot, it just happened with Jordan Mason, the 49ers running back, where they put a tender on him. So that's the equivalent of making him
a qualifying offer, restricted
free agent. Yeah. And, you know, the Vikings were basically go to them and say, we're going to offer him this, but let's just agree to a trade instead. And then, and you see a lot of player movement in that sort of bucket in the NFL. And so one thing I wonder about is, could we see teams, like as a minimal impact, like this is a small eye impact of the Holloway thing, could we see teams do their business in reverse order? This is what Bukala said on Kipper and Bourne that has Toronto all fired up about the prospect of a Nye's offer sheet. And his suggestion was basically, should the Maple Leafs make sure to do their business in reverse? Usually you'd wait on your RFAs because they're unlikely to get tendered an offer sheet. And in fact, prioritize getting that one done before even like Tavares and Marner so that you're not exposed on July 1 when the market opens. And I think we will see teams consider going that route. And sort of to build on Bukala's point and take it to like a more devious extreme, what about this? What about a team like Chicago or a team like San Jose does two things on the same day, right? You send Darren Ferris an email and offer Mitch Marner 2 years, $25 million, $12.5 million cap hit, but it's a short-term agreement.
Okay.
And you also sign Matthew Nyes to an offer sheet at like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe it's walking to UFA, but at a high paying
really
point
high
number,
level,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like you're paying him for UFA years now, and you have no guarantee of security. We're not doing your work for you. This isn't the Aho deal. This isn't a long term deal. This is just a deeply inconvenient one. And you effectively put the Maple Leafs in a position where they have to choose a guy. Could you leverage?
Assuming Marner is down for that deal from
Chicago.
Yeah, from Chicago or San Jose. Yeah, but it's at least a possibility.
Could you use offer sheets? Because you could do it with Sam Iskevich and Sam Bennett if he hit unrestricted free agency. Yeah. Does it take a lot of coordination? Does it take a willingness on all players to sign it? For sure. But like, if you're making guys fair offers, offering them big money, guess what? They're usually willing to take it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nyes stands out as the one that could be a real pickle for the Leafs because of the performance he's put in. I think you could get to a much higher number that teams would be comfortable paying him, and that could make it pretty awkward for the Leafs, considering they still have to do Tavares because they want to keep him. They might want to do Marner as well going forward. That one's a pretty interesting one. Now, RD texts in, with the increased cap going forward, will an offer sheet be as effective as it turned out to be last offseason? Because I do think the salary cap going up cuts both ways on this. On the one hand, you've got teams with oodles of cap space who are going to be motivated to spend it and look like very much looking for places to spend that money because they're not going to be able to do it just on the UFA market with deals that made sense. So, okay, there's no UFAs that we want to throw money at. Well, let's go to the RFA market. So that could contribute to it. But I think there's also fewer teams that you can look at and say, oh man, we can put them in cap hell with an RFA.
Oh yeah.
With an offer sheet. And that's always the key here. I guess theoretically you can go to a team that's not in cap hell and you can make the offer so lucrative for the player that they say, you know what? We don't like that deal. It's inefficient. We'll just take the picks. But I think typically the way you're going to get players in this scenario is by essentially tying the other team's hands, right? Where you're putting them in a situation where it's just like, well, you actually can't match this. Well, like, it would be so prohibitive that you basically can't do it.
But, I mean, they can also exceed the cap by 10% minus whatever bonus overages they've got, right? So there's, you know, I shouldn't say literally can't.
I mean, just like, it would be so prohibitive in all what the domino effect would be that it's a painful decision.
Yeah, or you put them in a bind in terms of just like, if you do this, you have to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's really what the Edmonton Oilers, that's what really what they did to the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers had gone, I think they made some interesting choices in terms of getting a little bit older, a little bit more reliable. Look, I thought they made some sharp bets overall, but you bring in Skinner at 3, Arvidsson at 4, Henrique at 3, right? So they'd sort of already, you know, effectively committed an awful lot of their cap space. They have sort of, they had long-term things to consider, given that McDavid becomes extension eligible on July 1. What a story, right? And Evan Bouchard becomes an RFA. Honestly, Edmonton and Evan Bouchard might be the best target again this summer. And then...
Can you imagine? Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine if it was the Blues?
That would be so sick. Oh, my gosh. That would be amazing. That is just bullying at that point. It's like, I'm just picking on you.
Let's be real. Let's go.
That would be so good.
That would be
amazing.
So, yeah, they'd sort of already made their commitments in some ways. So if they were going to match Broberg and Holloway or match one or the other, you know, they would have had to do some other things, right? But, oh, well, we've got to turn around now and trade Jeff Skinner. And they didn't want to do that. Now, they should have, but they didn't.
Yeah. Well, they just signed him.
I know.
Yeah. And that's kind of what Books is talking about, right? Where the do your business in reverse.
Do your business
in
reverse.
So you don't get put in that type of bind, in that type of situation.
Yeah. Well, and look, there's teams like the Canucks were very conscious of this when they had Pettersson and Hughes. Now, Hughes wasn't extension or offer sheet eligible, right? Which was a big weapon. So it was really Pettersson. And one of the things that we, I mean, how often did we talk about it? Did we even do the show back then? I don't know if we did. Well, I talked about it a lot. One thing that I kept talking about was the Canucks will not do Hughes before Pettersson, right? Pettersson always had to go first.
Right.
And Hughes always had to wait on Pettersson because if the Canucks had done Hughes first, they would have been exposed on Petey.
To an offer sheet. Yeah.
To the risk of an offer sheet. And the Canucks were like very careful about holding that cap space. Building a moat, a cap wall. It's a big reason why they bought out Holtby. Right. It's a big reason why they traded Nate Schmidt. Right. Like those deals didn't have to be done on the timeline that they were. The Canucks were just absolutely maniacal about making sure that they built a moat as it stood. One edge that the Canucks have here, by the way, is that there aren't a ton of guys. Right. And that they have themselves
that are
to be
risk.
Mindful of.
Yeah.
But I will say this, if I was a team in need of center depth, like one other thing that I don't think people think about enough with salary cap, or sorry, with offer sheet compensation, like honestly, one of the things, like I don't know that we've ever seen it, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but one other thing that we never see is, you know, below a certain level, I'm just looking for it now, below $1.5 million, there is no compensation attached.
And I like that.
And I've always wondered why you wouldn't go like to pick an. There's got to be an Atu Ratu.
Yes.
Somewhere else who like can play center, wins a lot of draws. Hey, there's some questions about his upside. But it's like you're going to sign some guys to a $1 million deal or $1.5 million deal who have way less upside than adding an Atu Ratu type.
Yep.
I've always wondered why teams don't consider you know, going out and finding like a cap pressed contender and doing the 1.5
and trying to get it from like 900,000 to 1.5. And that's too much for them
back in the fall of 2020, which was the NHL offseason that time. I kept saying someone should do this for Ross Colton. Like Ross Colton was the guy. I was like, someone go and sign this guy for at the time it was like 1.25 million. Right. That's like the example for me anyway, of like a classic, like someone should do that for a guy who's not yet proven, but who has some like skill and ability to meaningfully help you out.
Lots of people texting in about specific potential targets for RFA offer sheets. And I was just looking before the show, and the names that popped to me at forward were Matt, and this is based on player, but also the situation of the team where it feels like maybe there's something to be done there.
Rasmus Kupari, I'm going to suggest.
All right.
Rasmus Kupari, take him to UFA, which is only 2 years. Well, that might be too easy to match.
I feel like they just matched that.
Yeah. Damn.
I feel like their way to really get
but
weird.
But they have a lot
like
to do.
Term.
They have a lot to do. Yeah, you're right. Like five times 1.5, but why would the player sign that?
Yeah. Maybe this is why it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So Matthew Nyes, Will Cooley, Mackie Samuskevich, Maverick Bourque are the names
that
occurred to me.
Maverick Bourque is an interesting one, but that wouldn't be a no compensation one. Right? You'd have to come in at a higher point than that. But yeah, the Dallas Stars have a lot of cap money committed. They've got Mikko Rantanen's extension kicking in. Jason Robertson becomes extension eligible, right? They've got a bunch of expiring guys, but you also have to replace those expiring guys. Duchesne, Dadonov, Granlund, like that's middle six material. Jamie Benn presumably is going to stay at a reduced number, but like reduced?
Still, yeah.
and they'll want to keep him. And look, they've still got a defense to fix. Jake Oettinger's salary also doubles. You've still got multiple years left for Tyler Seguin. I mean, that's a team that's going to be up against it. Maverick Bourque's a perfect example.
Now,
actually,
the other one, the
I'm
other
team Maverick Bourque. He's right-handed.
Now, some people are saying, questioning if Bourque is eligible because he might not have played enough games.
Oh,
I can't comment on that, but something to note.
He hasn't played any games, so he's not eligible.
He's not eligible for an offer sheet. All right, there you go. But Gray and East Van texted in, is Volander for Bourque a fair trade? Our decor is looking good. We need a center, and it's the opposite for Dallas. That's in Gray and East Van.
Sorry, what? He wouldn't be eligible for an offer sheet. Why? He's not 10.2C.
He hasn't played 80 games.
Are you sure about that?
He's played 64.
I don't know if that's right.
I'm not certain if that's the requirement.
10.2C guys, it's based on years of service. It's not like I guess he's only 2 years in, but why did he...
Does the first year count? He only played one game first year.
It's not that he burned a year. Like, it's because he didn't go through the college route. No, I'm pretty confident he would be eligible, but I'll double check on it. Because he's not 10.2C. Those are the black hole guys who don't have free agent rights.
But to your point...
Let's not get bogged down.
Whether he's eligible or not for an offer sheet... It's still like a raise and everything that Dallas has to do with him. And the point of, hey, can you find these guys that might be squeezed out on their current team and make a trade at least with the player? And I don't know about Volander specifically. I mean, I think the organization is just really, really high on him, even with the new depth they've got on the blue line. But something along those lines of, you know, stop me if you've heard this one before, dealing from a position of strength to address one of the other weaknesses or holes on your roster. If an offer sheet doesn't get it done, maybe something like that with Maverick Bourque could make sense for the Canucks. So those are the names that jumped out to me. Again, Matthew Nyes, Will Cooley, Samuskevich, and Maverick Bourque. And you're on Bourque. Any of the other ones interest you at all?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Matthew Nyes. I think Matthew Nyes is a star. So, like, he's a completely unique profile.
He is. And that's the one where I think it's probably... It's cost prohibitive, I think, for the Canucks. Like, his salary is going to be really impressive.
Nyes is flat out one of my guys.
All right. We're going to pivot here for just a few minutes. Dimitri is going to join us at 1:30. But right now here on Canucks Talk, Daryl Lamb from the RTD show, Cider, Sodas, and Cocktails, which you can catch here on Sportsnet 650, joins the show. Daryl, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. Don't let me interfere if you guys are talking about my boy Matthew Nyes. That's all good for me.
You a big Matthew Nyes guy?
I am. In fact, a very good friend of mine is the equipment manager for the Vancouver Canucks. And every time Canada's team comes to town, which is only once a year, he always gets me an autographed stick from the Maple Leafs, which I happen to be a monster fan of. I was actually named after the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And this year he's like, so who do you want? You want Mitch Bonner? I'm like, I do not want Mitch Bonner at all. I want Matthew Knies. And I've got right on my wall right now a signed Matthew Knies stick. That kid's going to be a star.
Well, I hope you're prepared for him to get offer sheeted and go somewhere else. But
You know what, man? If the Leafs need anything, it's probably four or five first round picks, because I think they've traded every one for the last 250 years.
Well, we won't hold your Leafs fandom against you, Daryl, but you know, it's a big sports weekend. We're in really the sweet spot of the sports calendar right now. You still got March Madness going on, big NHL races going into the playoffs. Baseball is back. What's on tap for you? What should people be considering enjoying as they sit down to watch some sports over the weekend?
So this is one of my favorite times. I think opening day is one of the biggest days in sports, and I was having such a great time yesterday with opening day. And we've got so many great local products that we've been really pushing and supporting and things like that. Right now it's innovation season, so we got new flavors of the Hey Y'alls, you got new flavors of Mad Lab, you got all kinds of great new stuff. So Centauri -196 for anybody that's a Dodgers fan and loves their Japanese baseball. Well, the number one drink from Japan has finally arrived on Canada's shores, and it is gone crazy. It is already the hit of the summer, and that hasn't even started.
And I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but you know, it's almost summer. I know we're dealing with some gray, rainy weather right now, but eventually it will turn. The nice weather will get here, and I should say spring weather and then summer weather. So as we're looking ahead a little bit, you know, we can all feel it. Soon we're going to be on a patio. We're going to be enjoying a beverage with our friends out in the sun. What are you looking at as the perfect drink for that scenario, out in the sun, on a patio with your friends?
Well, I mean, right now what we're seeing is a lot of people, they want to kind of not necessarily go voluminous. I need 12 beers of that, sure, sort of stuff. They want to have one or two drinks at a time. And so what we're really seeing is a big movement towards high quality prepackaged cocktails. And there's a fantastic Vancouver that a lot of your listeners will all be familiar with called Duchess Fine Cocktails. And they have a bunch of new flavors coming out. They've got their classic Cosmo, their lemon drop, that sort of stuff. But now they've come out with some, like, a rum daiquiri. They're coming out with a bunch of different martinis. So I'm thinking, you know, class it up. Sit out there on that patio and sip on a martini rather than, you know, crushing five or six Budweisers.
Daryl, really appreciate you taking a couple of minutes here. Enjoy the sports weekend, and we'll chat again sometime.
All right. Thanks a lot, boys.
That is Daryl Lamb. And of course, you can hear him Saturdays, 8 to 9 a.m. on the Cider, Sodas, and Cocktails show here on Sportsnet 650. And yeah, it's going to be a massive weekend in the world of sports. And of course, a big weekend in the NHL as well. We'll chat about the NHL weekend to come, the week to come for the Vancouver Canucks with our next guest, Dmitry Filipovich, here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It is Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. It's a Canucks game day. They take on the Columbus Blue Jackets, 4 p.m. puck drop. Sat and Dan will have Canucks Central in the pregame show for you after our show, but not until we speak to a tanned, ready, and rested Dmitry Filipovich, back from vacation and ready to give us the goods here on a Friday. What's going on, man?
Oh, how can you all love it? Friday afternoon, I just got back from Hawaii.
This is what it's all about.
Yeah, it's great.
The shock of coming back from Hawaii
to
gray, rainy Vancouver.
Well, I was expecting it. It wasn't that surprising, but still.
You can expect it, but it's still tough.
It really is. You know what? This is a ray of sunshine.
Getting to talk with the two of you.
Yeah, I missed you last week as well. So.
Really? You were in Hawaii being like, I feel like I should be doing right now.
No, before I went to Hawaii, I believe I did the Monday show instead
with
Josh and Tom, and so we missed you. So
it's good to be reunited. Well, that's nice. What do you make of this Canucks team? Like, I go back and forth on whether this is like, what's the word I'm looking for where You like cut the chicken's head off and it keeps moving?
Yeah. Yeah, the zombie Canucks. I mean, it's impressive from a cockroach.
Cockroach Canucks was my terminology.
Yeah, I can't decide if it's that, if it's like, wow, this is incredible. They're going to go and run and make it, or if it's just like, this is what you see right before it ultimately all falls apart.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think they can't keep getting away with it. But I said that like three or four games ago, and they keep doing it. So
and they
I
simply
think
have.
I think the compete is certainly impressive, right? Like we talked about the Flames early in the season when they were sort of undermanned, not very talented with the group they had, and they kept kind of grinding out wins like this and just staying competitive, and we praised them. So I feel like we also need to do that for the Canucks because they're doing their part here, making it a very interesting race, and it should be a fun weekend of games.
Columbus, the matchup tonight. Now, they've had a really interesting season, obviously been one of the good stories in the NHL for a long time. It looked like they had maybe hit the skids and fallen out of the picture in the Eastern Conference playoff race, but nobody is running away with that. There is no St. Louis in the East who has staked their claim to that final wildcard spot, so they're still right there. How are they playing right now? What kind of difficulties are they going to pose for the Canucks tonight?
Yeah, I believe if the Blue Jackets win tonight and the Canadiens lose in Carolina, the Blue Jackets will be in the second wildcard spot in the East by a point percentage. So this is obviously a huge swing game for both teams. They've had 3 days off, I believe, of rest here since their last game, so they should be well rested. They got Monahan back recently. I think that's going to be a huge boost for them. You know, they were this like really explosive, fun offensive team for the first 55 to 60 games of the year, and then when the calendar turned to March, it completely dried up. They got shut out in 4 of 7 games. So I think they're better than that, certainly at home, especially with that cannon and the crowd and the atmosphere. Yes. It seems like that brings the best out of them offensively. So they have a lot of team speed, a ton of talent up front. Similar, it's going to be a fascinating from like the Norris Trophy conversation perspective, the battle, because I believe we saw Werenski in their most recent game play like 34 minutes or something outrageous. And we're certainly going to see Quinn Hughes log a heavy workload as well. So those two guys do so much heavy lifting for their teams and are two of the best three defensemen in the world right now. So it's going to be a very exciting matchup. I really like watching this Blue Jackets team play, and I think there's a lot of cool players to get excited about.
I got to ask you about Kent Johnson as well. Of course, local product, having a breakout year offensively for Columbus and part of this young group of really exciting, dynamic, talented forwards. Why has he been able to have that breakout season here?
Yeah, I think it's been a combination of things. I think it's natural for where he's at in terms of a couple years into his career in his early 20s. Certainly, you know, with the coaching change, we were criticizing Pascal Vincent last year for burying guys like him and Marchenko and Voronkov in terms of ice time. Dean Evason's come in and completely freed him up. I think he's playing like 3.5 or 4 minutes more per game than he was last year. He's been incredibly productive. I think he's been what he was sold to us as a prospect, right? Like, he's a magician with the puck. He's so smooth and creative. His shot has really come a long way. It's very precise now. So, yeah, I mean, he's a phenomenal playmaker. It's amazing that he's been as productive as he's been because he doesn't really ever get to play with those top guys, and those top guys play with Werenski quite a bit. So he's kind of like playing with all these expendable parts and still producing a 5-on-5. I know, Tom, you're one of the biggest Kent Johnson guys I know. So
yeah, I he's got some of the best natural hockey sense I've seen. I think I see some young Kucherov in his game.
Wow.
Like, I'd go that lofty. I think he can be one of the best pure offensive players in the league.
That's very high praise.
Yeah,
that's about as high as it gets for a young winger.
I don't throw it around lightly. I think he's a special, special talent. Been one of the most efficient shooters in the league, and he tries stuff all the time. And sometimes, like, I actually think he's leaving some stuff on the table, in part because he, you know, should reprogram his brain to play a little more north-south, you know? I think that would benefit him. I'm not kidding.
I wonder if there's a coach that could help him with
that. I'm not kidding. Like, there's just moments where, you know, he tries such wild stuff. He did it when the Canucks played the Blue Jackets and the Blue Jackets were up 2-0. He got a pass off a 2-on-1, and instead of trying to handle it and shoot the wrist shot, he was like, oh, this is funny. I've got a good opening to go for the 5-hole, and he smacked it. Like, he literally one hand slapped the puck at the, and it was a good scoring chance. It almost went in, but like, if he scores there, they maybe have an extra point.
Yeah.
And that could matter now. Like, there's just moments where he's so skilled and sees things no one else does that he'll try some stuff that I think as he matures and figures out how to be a winning hockey player, not just a source of incredible offense, I think that sort of stuff will just become goals.
Before we keep going with the Canucks schedule, I do want to ask you about the team they're chasing in the playoff race, the St. Louis Blues. They narrowly win in regulation again last night against, again, Nashville. Somehow they played them again. 8 wins in a row. Now, a lot of that is Nashville, Chicago, but still they're doing the job. They're playing who's in front of them. They're getting it done. And they're trying to hold off the Canucks for a playoff spot. They also are chasing Minnesota for the second, or for the first wild card spot, I should say. Mm-hmm. Do they look like a team that not only is obviously the heavy favorite to make the playoffs of the other contending teams, but a team that like Winnipeg or Vegas should be maybe a little frightened of playing even in the first round?
Yeah, I think certainly. I mean, obviously this most recent stretch where they've gone like whatever, 12-2-2 and then the 8-game winning streak are on the extreme end, but you could really take it back to late November when Jim Montgomery took over. Their underlying metrics since then have all been quite good, defensively especially. They've been a top two team in terms of preventing expected goals against and high danger chances against. So that, with the combination of that firepower, and now with Buchnevich out, we're seeing Holloway playing with Kyrou and Thomas and how dynamite they are off the rush. Whenever a team's playing this well and things are going their way, like you kind of expect eventually it'll return to course a little bit and normalize, but at the same time, the playoffs are in 3 weeks or so. And so if you keep playing this well heading into it, it's certainly like something in the back of your mind where you're like, you don't want to run into a team that's playing this well, even if you don't think it can continue. Because in the playoffs, it doesn't really need to
be sustainable. Yeah. It's like, you just need to do it for 4 to 7 games.
Yeah, I need 10 more days of this and I'm good. And so that's pretty scary for a team like the Jets, who, as we've talked about, has so much on the line this season.
Yep.
In terms of the stakes, how good they've been as well. They're going to have home ice. They have all these playoff demons from the past couple of years. And all of a sudden you're like, all right, well, we're the best team in the West. We're going to earn a cupcake matchup against the worst team in our conference. Yeah, and all of a sudden it's like the hottest
one.
The
hottest team for the last like 2 months in hockey.
Yeah. And between neighbors, Joseph Holloway, like the, you know, Kyrou, Thomas, the Blues have the speed to stress them out on the rush, right? Yes. Like that. I think it's, you absolutely want the St. Louis Blues to pass the Minnesota Wild, I think, if you're the Winnipeg Jets. Not that they'd ever admit to that or even like say it, because it would be putting negativity into the world. I guarantee you, on some level, like Kevin Cheveldayoff is like, has definitely checked the standings a couple times and thought it. Has to have.
Yep. Although, if you're going to tell spin a narrative from the Jets' perspective of this being the year that they shed all their demons.
Right.
Go through the Blues.
Yeah.
Team that they lost to, I believe, when the Blues went on their way to win the cup. Round two against Colorado, who pants
them last
year.
Yeah.
And then Vegas potentially in round three as the winner of the Pacific.
The team that
beat
them
on the way to their Stanley Cup victory as well 2 years ago in the first round. So it's like shedding a lot of these previous obstacles that they haven't been able to come across. Now, I think that's a very glass half full view of it. Yeah. I don't think they necessarily want to go that path, but it's a compelling one from like a narrative perspective.
Now, are you suggesting that we could see an Eric Comrie game on Sunday as the Winnipeg Jets try to avoid the Blues, get the Canucks into that final playoff spot?
Oh, well, no, I know. I think, well, also, I'm sure.
Now that's 40. That's 40.
I'm sure Hellebuyck, too, like, wants to beat
wants
the team
revenge.
That lit him up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I think I've said it a few times on air, like, that is a terrifying game from a Canucks perspective for me on the final game of a long road trip.
Especially the last time they played in Winnipeg, they just got absolutely demolished.
They've had some tough performances in Winnipeg over the last few years. It seemed to always be a really difficult place for them to play. Winnipeg's so good, looking for revenge, all of those things. Like, that.
It's always their way station on the way home, too. So I think that's part of it, right? Like, I do think last game of a road trip is tough. Shouldn't be as tough now, given the stakes for this Canucks team. But, how are the Canucks doing this in terms of not having center depth? And they've actually been kind of, like, generating more.
Right.
It's been pretty ridiculous. Like, on some level,
Derek Forbort, that's how they've been doing it.
Yeah, offensive ace Derek Forbort's been a big part of the story. But what else are you seeing there, Dim?
It's a great question. I wake up every morning and I ask myself, how are they doing
this?
How are they doing this? I scream to myself as I have no answers coming. I mean, obviously Quinn Hughes is just outrageous. The game he played at MSG last week or whatever, the plays are blending together for me now, but that was like one of the best individual performances.
The one where he walked Matt Rempe.
That was not high on the list of impressive things to do. I love these Rangers games, by the way, especially like the opposing broadcasts. They're always like, Matt Rempe, what a story. This guy's been working on his skills It's like, he's a professional player. I feel like they all should be doing and that. Then, the way they talk about him is wild.
See, I feel the sensation of Rangers games for the out-of-town crowd is people being like, what the hell is wrong with this?
Why
Rangers
are their
team?
Forwards so far like, away from their defenders? On
I've
the
never seen this before.
Like as that game went along, the Dave Tomlinson, credit to him, kept being like, man, it's amazing that Quinn Hughes has gotten out again against Pat Rempe. Like, he started spotlighting just the lack of Rangers matchup discipline. It was incredible.
Yes.
I was sitting on my couch at home crying laughing.
Yeah, the Rangers have led the league in those types of reactions from the visiting fans or the away fans.
I love Dave Tomlinson, but I thought the amount of times that he was outraged by like basic New York Rangers decisions over the course of that game made it his finest game this season. Like, I thought it was high comedy. I was losing my mind.
That wasn't even the most egregious game they played that week, because the one against Calgary previously generated the amount of just national disgust from people who like aren't necessarily following the Rangers on a daily basis.
Who have no stake in the Rangers.
Tune in, they're like, 13 shots on goal? What is happening? Like, people were just...
And then the two shots on goal they had against the Kings, I was just like, man, this team is always
and
doing
they
this.
Scored, and they scored right away to start the second.
Yeah, I know. Like, classic.
Getting away with it.
Who scored, Jim?
I'm not falling for your trap, Tom.
Fair enough.
Who do you like to survive in the East for that second wild card spot?
Yeah, I think I'm
Dim's team Columbus, man.
Team Columbus for sure. I think Montreal would be fun because that home atmosphere is electric. You saw that Canada game against the Avs and they made the comeback and how lively and fun that is, and it's been a while since we've gotten to see that from them, so I think that'll be a fun one. I think as long as it's not either the two New York teams, I'm pretty done with them. I think 82 games of the Islanders and the Rangers is enough for me. I don't need to see 4 to 7 more.
Absolutely plenty for those teams. Plus, we get Montreal, speaking of exercising demons from playoffs past, potential President's Trophy winning Washington Capitals team going up against the Montreal Canadiens in round one, the 8th seed. That'll be fun.
That would be fun. You'll be seeing a lot of clips from that.
Yaroslav Halak highlights.
Was it 2010? No.
Yeah, well, 2010. Sorry, 2009, I think.
Let's just keep guessing.
Yeah. No, it was 2009.
You guys want to draft what year it could have been?
It was the year that the Blackhawks beat the Flyers. It was the year of the Patrick Kane secret game Stanley Cup winning goal. 2010? That was 2010?
Yeah.
So that's the year it was, because the Flyers... played the Habs in the Eastern Conference Final.
There you go.
Which I remember because it was my buddy's bachelor party, and we went to Montreal, and we bought him a Flyers jersey and made him wear it all weekend, and people were like pouring beers on his head, throwing stuff at him from windows. It was so good.
Are we going to draft something at some point here? Do we have any?
So I have two ideas.
Okay.
I have two ideas. We can draft first round matchups we most want to see.
Okay. Mm.
Or we can draft nicknames for Jamie. Okay, I've been doing this bit that we need to find a nickname for Jamie that is either one of the following two things: a college mascot, okay, or like a American college sports mascot, or an item of fast food.
Ooh.
So right now it's Jimmy Cheesesteak Dog.
No, I'm pushing Jayhawk. Jayhawk is the one.
Yeah, but you can never come up with your own nickname.
And then my weekly rant segment is Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
Yeah. I'm so in for this. I love it. It's like Drance and the Jayhawk on Canucks. Coming to you on Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Okay, so let's draft our favorite playoff matchups.
You went back to 40s mid-Atlantic voice. We're going for 90s sports radio vibes, and you went to 40s.
Yeah, Tommy and the Jayhawks.
You're doing a gangster movie.
Drance and the Jayhawks coming to you live. I'm excited about it. Okay, let's do playoff matchups.
Yeah, let's do playoff matchups.
All right, who wants to go first?
Now... are they the one ones that are currently based on the seeding, or realistic ones?
Realistically possible.
Realistically possible, but just like the funnest storylines, the games you most want to watch.
Okay. Yeah. I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay.
We talked about it earlier. I got to go the Battle of Ontario. Toronto, Ottawa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be awesome. Toronto, could you find a way to ramp up the heartbreak and the schadenfreude of a first-round exit for the Leafs even more? How about losing to the upstart Ottawa Senators? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. That's what playoff hockey is all about. I think I was saying it on the Halford and Brough Show last week. Like, I've never been a Canada's team guy. I don't care about Canadian teams having success. But purely from a viewing experience, two Canadian teams going up against each other is awesome in the first round of the playoffs. So I think that's that takes the cake for me pretty easily.
Dim?
All right, I'll go. I think from an excitement perspective to just watch the games, I think it would have to be Florida versus Tampa Bay.
That's a good one.
Battle of Florida, just because those two teams match up so well. They obviously both loaded up at the deadline. And a handful of new players in the mix for each side. And the series we've seen from them have been delightfully entertaining. And it feels like this year's versions of those two teams are even better. So I think that would be a remarkable one. I think Florida's probably going to wind up winning that division and getting at him. It's going to be Toronto, Tampa Bay instead. But based on points right now, at least, it's very in play.
So I'm going to pick back-to-back here, and I'm going to pick the LA Kings chase down the Vegas Golden Knights so we get a Golden Knights-Edmonton Oilers first-round series. Yeah, I'm watching every second of that series. That sounds great. And second pick, Dallas, Colorado, should be a Stanley Cup final. Let's be real. That's two of the top five teams in the league. Great value. Steal of the draft.
Yeah, Dallas, Colorado is awesome. That's a great one with the Mikko Rantanen storyline and everything. And that had to go early at some point.
And the game that they just played was like, you know, better than cheesesteak.
By the way, and apparently people have decided that Mikko Rantanen is like the dirtiest player in the NHL now. There's people trying to make the Connor Zary injury. People are like, someone's got to do something about this guy. It's like, you mean because he caught an edge and fell down?
This happens whenever an American-based player injures a Canadian.
Yeah.
A player who plays for a Canadian team. Like, Mike Matheson, dirtiest player in the world. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Mackenzie Weegar. That was one of the other ones I dealt with. Mackenzie Weegar fought Paul Byron after Paul Byron had hit him from behind in preseason, injuring him. So he like came out and wanted to fight Paul Byron, fights Paul Byron. Byron sustains a concussion, regrettably, in a fight that he, you know, it was like a gentlemanly, hey, I owe you, you owe me for this.
A gentlemanly bare knuckle brawl.
on the ice. Yeah. And like, I swear the way that Montreal media talked about Mackenzie Weegar, who like you watch enough to know is like absolutely not a thuggish player at all. It was like, you know, you'd have thought that we kept him in a cage eating raw meat until puck drop. It was incredible.
All right, I'm going to stick in the Pacific Division, and I can't believe I'm saying this.
Well, Jamie, I hate to do this to you.
All right, it's you.
Show, but it's my and I'm going to stick in the Pacific Division, and I will take a rematch. Year four.
Yeah.
No.
You're going to take my pick.
Kings Oilers. I hate to do this to you, Jamie, Jayhawk, but I think, listen,
the Oilers feel way more vulnerable in that matchup than they have in previous years.
I'm so excited to pick LA in that matchup.
Yeah. Especially with the Kings at home and how good they've been with home ice in that series, potentially, and how good they've been at home.
And the fact that they've tapped into some newfound juice in the second half. Like, they're good, man.
Now, I watched the past 3 years. The Kings were deplorable in every one of those series. And so I hate watched it. Because it's my job and I had to watch it, but I did not enjoy it. And so I'm hoping the entertainment value of the games with them more evenly matched is actually going to pay off this year. If it's a replica of like quality, it won't be a good pick here, but I feel like year four of this, like they eventually have to get over the hump.
No, I think that's a great pick. Honestly, I think you're right that everyone's like, oh, we've seen this before, but I think it's going to have a totally different dynamic this year, considering, as you said, how vulnerable Edmonton is. I'll go with Winnipeg, St. Louis. Just to see if they can survive the hot team in round one and the potential choking vibes for the Winnipeg Jets. And also the thing that's making this exercise a little tougher is both Minnesota and New Jersey are locked in as playoff teams, but it's like hard to feel excited about watching a matchup featuring either of those two teams.
It's too bad they couldn't play each other in the first round.
No one is. Yeah, seriously. It's like, can we just segregate you guys somewhere? Although then one of them has to advance to the second. So that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But like, no one's picking Carolina and New Jersey. That's who is excited to watch that series?
No, nobody.
No one on earth.
Dim, go again. Let's do.
We're going to stretch this for one more?
Yeah, sorry. So you pick two in a row.
Oh, Jamie. Yeah. But then it should be over.
Yeah. And then one more round.
Okay. So I got to do one more here?
Yeah.
No, then one more round.
One more round. You'd pick one. Jamie, well, no, we each, Jim we picks we one, and then two, I right? pick one.
Yeah, we each have two, so we should just wrap it here.
No, we have time. Go, come on. Hurry up.
All right, I'll take the Canucks making it and playing Winnipeg.
Okay. Dim?
You want to watch that series?
Two Canadian teams, man.
Yeah. I'm going to go Columbus for getting in as the wild card and playing Washington. I feel like that would be a really high score.
That's good value, man.
And so, yeah.
And I'm going to pick the series we all really want. Winnipeg versus Utah.
We said realistic, man. Come on. We said plausible in the cards here. That is not the case for
Good
Utah.
Stuff.
All right. He's Dmitry Filipovich. He hosts the Hockey PDO cast here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Thank you as always to Dim for joining us on a Friday afternoon. Thanks to everyone for listening. Sat and Dan have Canucks Central coming up next, and then the Canucks pregame show. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games. We're back on Monday here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.